This episode is sponsored by Autodesk. What's up, everybody? Before we get into this week's episode, I want to shout out for all those that are in our Discord channel. Every week from now on, I'm going to give attention to those good people that are following us and giving support in between episodes every Tuesday. This one is to Sage. Recently participated in Ludum Dare and have their game up for anyone that's ready to test it. It's the jam theme of this one is called Limited Space. It's like Snake. However, you're gathering ores, but you do not touch the wall that's the same color as you. It's very interesting. Check the show notes for those who want to check it out and click through and give the love out there. In addition, I know the industry out there is kind of a bit crazy. I do have an episode coming out next week, a roundtable with Ray discussing just that. Be sure to catch that one. Also, I think it's a little fun to kind of read reviews, either good or bad, on the Apple iTunes Store for the Game Dev Unchained podcast. This one was recently left on June 14, 2023 by Mavilla Sco07. Shout out. Giving it a 5-star review, saying, "No matter the subject, you're guaranteed to gain something from every episode. Can't recommend Game Dev Unchained enough." Now, for those who have the time, I highly, highly encourage you guys to go onto the Game Dev Unchained Apple podcast to leave any review if anything is helpful, because this kind of helps the podcast reach a wider net of audience out there. And I promise, you leave it there, either good or bad, I will read it on every episode. And if you have cool projects, you have cool things to show, cool things to discuss in between weekly episodes, hang out in the Discord channel. It's a great way to kind of keep in a connection while I can, you know, blast and use this as a platform, your work. To the listeners out there. So thank you again for all the support, and on to this week's episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Fram. And with me, a special guest, a returning guest, Brian Canary. Did I say that right?
Okay. You did, just like the bird.
All right, perfect.
Canary's good.
So this is the part of the podcast, Brian, where I let our guest, which is yourself, to do a quick synopsis of where you've been, where you're at, where you're heading, before we get into it.
Yeah, I'm a veteran game designer in the games industry. I've worked on lots of stuff, EverQuest, Dark Age of Camelot, Champions Online, lots and lots of things like that. Recently moved over to the UK 5 years ago, and I've been here at Splash Damage ever since, working on stuff that I still can't talk about, which is always fun about the industry.
No worries, man. There's so many things to talk about. A lot have changed. I haven't talked to you for years now, pretty much before COVID. We missed interesting conversations about NFT, blockchain, metaverse, and now, like, you know, RTO, you know, return to office and everyone, Gen Z. There's so much to dig into. I love usually kind of getting the mindset of a designer, how you're reacting from this AI, you know, being a big topic.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, how has it been for you over there? Has any of these topics affected you guys over in London?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, we've definitely just had a return to office here at Splash Damage that I'm at. But the icing on the cake there is that we did have to return to office this week, but we're on to a 4-day work week, which is great. That definitely sweetens the deal a little bit, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because I've never had a 4-day work week, so it's going to be interesting to see how that feels to not work for 5 days in a week. But I think that's probably a good compromise. But I mean, I still see the allure, obviously, of hybrid. It's a lot tougher, I think, to be collaborative in a design aspect in the beginning of a project over distance. So I'm really going to appreciate being in the same room with the people and designing, because that can be tough at the beginning. I mean, obviously when you get into production and everything kind of is laid out and there's only like some adjustments, that's a little easier, which is what I did with my former project. But on the one I'm at, which is still in concept, it really is good to get everybody in the same room. It's easier to get aligned that way. It really is.
Yeah, for sure. I think, that was with many people I've had on to talk to. That was the main issue, especially for designers. You guys are so collaborative, needing that face-to-face, having the ability to kind of riff off each other in a room. It's still like a pending issue that I don't think is solvable. Meta trying their best to kind of do the virtual reality, it's not the same. So kind of hearing you reiterating that just is a good reminder that there are just some things that requires in office, especially the conceptual stage of pretty much anything, to be honest. Anytime there's a discussion that he's had. So you returning to office is the idea. I feel like your studio is probably at the tail end of most studios. Like a lot of studios over in the States have kind of implemented this pretty aggressively the last year and a half.
Yeah. They take a more measured approach over here. Okay. That's for sure.
Hey, listeners, have you ever had that dream where you're surrounded by people who, just like you, have this itch, this undeniable urge to create? Well, from November 13th to the 15th, you can tune into AU 2023. It's the Design and Make Conference where anyone who's ever doodled on a napkin or had a midnight eureka moment feels right at home. We're talking about a melting pot of innovators from architecture, engineering, design, and media and entertainment too. I've got two sessions I'm looking forward to tuning in and want to highlight. First, put on your gaming hats because Epic Games is about to sweep us off our feet. Dive into a time capsule as I use Unreal Engine magic to whisk us away back to Habitat 67. Pixels and nostalgia all rolled into one. And then, picture this, AI not just thinking but creating. Discover the genius behind generative AI that's jazzing up the world of 3D presented by NVIDIA. If your curiosity is even a fraction as picked as mine, you need to be there. Check our show notes for all the juicy details and links. Pack your creative hats and join the fun at AU 2023, happening from November 13th to the 15th. Let's not just dream it, let's make it. So is it because of the fear of COVID still running around, or is it just lifestyle changes, lot of people...
I don't think so. I think it's much more that they're not quite as reactionary over here in the UK as they are in the States. They just don't have that kind of reflex action that you see a lot of. There's also not a lot of like that Me Too-ism, when usually when one big a group does something, then a lot of people follow suit in the American games industry, feels like. They're a little more independent that way over here. So I think that's why it took so long. Also, if you're talking about a country that's the size of California, right? So it's like, it's not quite as expansive, right? You don't have that many different states and stuff where all of the minutia of return to office can be different, right? It's much more like measured in the same place. So I don't think it's quite as fractured as the US is when it comes to that. Mm-hmm.
Going into design and the things that are usually thrust upon you to kind of implement into a game system, right? Loot boxes years ago, I think when we were talking, was such a big issue where, microtransaction, all those things were kind of like new, right? Feel forced, but now it's kind of like more integrated, understood, respected, right? For mutual respect from the designing standpoint and then the consumer standpoint. There were a lot of things tried in the last few years that were in the same veins, right? NFT, blockchain, the metaverse, we're kind of glossing over a lot of things that happened in the last 3 years, but I would love to kind of hear your thoughts as these were kind of coming in. And the aftermath of that, what were your opinions and thoughts?
I think it's interesting that that it really felt like, obviously, like the live service and microtransactions and all that stuff was inevitable. Like that was like it was the only way. But you look at this year, and a lot of the biggest games are games that don't have any of that. I mean, Zelda, of course, that they never did. But I mean, like Baldur's Gate, Armored Core 6, now Starfield. These are big games. This is a year of very big games that have none of that. So it's interesting to see that it's not going away, right? That it's not, there's not going to be a sea change, and we're not going to see these types of games again. And that's, I think that's kind of heartening to me, that there can still be the traditional game, and it can still be wildly successful for anybody that's making it. It doesn't have to have all those things in it. Not to say that those things are bad, but I don't think that every game has to have them. So that's been cool. I like that. I like that. It's that the game industry always surprises me, and that's another thing that surprised me, is that stuff's still sticking around.
Yeah, there was definitely like a momentum shift during pandemic. I mean, I was starting to notice in the conferences a lot of single player game experiences announced, right? Just out of nowhere, just suddenly a return to that, where multiplayer for a while was the future or getting the headlines, and it was all about shared experiences. But I for whatever reason, being alone during COVID somehow made people, you know, you can see this with the remakes. There's so many great PS2.
Oh my gosh.
Resident Evil remakes, it's a comeback of remakes that we've enjoyed, that were proven. All single player experience kind of brought back, and just selling millions, just doing really well. I think the next big ones, well, there's a lot, right? Metal Gear Solid, even though, you know, there's controversy without Kojima and attached to it. But I'm still kind of, you know, deep down, I would love to see Snake Eater remade, right? But I wonder if it has some ties with, you know, kind of like the entertainment industry, because, you know, you had Game of Thrones back then, and then you have Mandalorian, and all this is like a linear, singular experience, but shared through commentary, and, you know, week by week, people are talking about it, buzzing it up. I feel like it's the same echo of that type of response with single player experience, because people are, the way that people are talking about Starfield, I swear it feels like a multiplayer game, but like it's pretty much everyone on their couch playing 80 plus hours, right?
It's true. I mean, is it truly single player if every waking moment you're talking about outside the game with somebody else, right? If you're still sharing the experience, it still feels there's a multiplayerness to it. Zelda felt the same way when you started seeing them doing all the amazing combinations you could do with those systems, right? And it just, that was the, I was addicted to the videos as much as the game, definitely watching as many videos about how many cool things people were building and how they were just basically mixing the systems in ways that you hadn't expected. That was just as compelling to me as playing the game itself.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is happening? Like, it just seemed like a light switch moment for all the designs, all the games being pitched, was a return to a lot of single player experience that I thought was, there was a good chunk of the conversation being like, single players are dead. You know, this is a forever dead art.
I mean, Sony still has, I think if I remember right, the most recent stuff they're talking about is it's like 40 or 50% or maybe even 60% of their new development is still going toward that. I mean, that's the reason why they bought Destiny, right? They wanted to have a model that works. And so, it's still there, but you're right. I mean, there's this groundswell, and I would hazard to guess it probably started out with indie stuff, right? Because they don't have, it's one of the reasons why is it's cheaper, obviously, to make a single player game than a multiplayer game, but because they don't have that kind of the risk isn't as big there, and you get stuff like Silksong, and you get those single player games that are really big there, that shows you that the market's still there, right? If they're not buying the big ones, they're buying the small ones, and that's the reason why you get stuff like Microsoft did earlier this year. What was the name of that game that came out, that quick little rhythm game, that rhythm action game, the anime looking one, that one.
I'll look it up while you keep talking about it. I know what you're talking about. I forgot.
I keep thinking Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, but that's the new one. But anyway,
High Rush or something.
Yeah, something. something Rush.
Something Rush. Yeah. Hi-Fi Rush.
Yes, that's it. Hi-Fi Rush. But it's like that stuff. I mean, that's kind of like half indie, right? I mean, that's kind of like a smaller dev team within the studio. But I guess also Microsoft, they have a little more leeway with Game Pass, right? They have a format, and Sony's getting into it now, but they have that format where they can kind of do a little bit of those kind of, we kind of missed the B games for a while, right? You didn't really see like those AA games for a while, but a place like Game Pass is a place where they can do that. And that's where you get the single player stuff coming back. I think is you see that everybody just assumes that single players are going to make the money because it doesn't have that recursive tail, right? But it doesn't have to have that recursive tail if, like you said, if everybody's still sharing the game. There you go. That's the game.
Still looks better. I still got to play it. Yeah, I keep forgetting.
Yeah. It looks great. It looks actually absolutely great. It's a beautiful looking game. But I lost my train of thought. I think it's that because it's the presumption, right, is that because co-op has that recursive tail, right? Because people are always playing against each other, and there's always kind of like that idea of the players of the content, right? That's the cheapness there. But there's also the players being the content in watching videos, right? So that's a different venue of it. So if they're still buying and playing your game, even though single player, like you said, in that social aspect, you're still kind of getting the multiplayer legs that they're looking for, and that's probably what has been reinforced over the last year or two.
Yeah, I think what people are discovering finally, at least the people with the money, is that there is an expansion of IP, right? We're starting, Last of Us is like getting Emmy nominations. I mean, it used to be a joke to have game IPs turn into movie licenses or movies, right? There's been such a string of success with Super Mario Brothers. A lot of it, I mean, it's obvious, but it wasn't obvious before. That including the original creators as part of the movie making process somehow, you know, gives value and also loyalty to the IP itself. And it's been working. And I think more and more creators, original creators are involved heavily, not just standing by on set.
Yeah.
Heavily involved into creation, which is one of the reasons why I think Netflix is heavily having like a game AAA IPs sectors of their business because they see like this ecosystem.
Sony too. I mean, that's the nice thing about them, right? Is they are also a media company and above being a game company. So they saw that, and they are literally turning out all of their IPs into those shows now.
Yes. Yeah. Uncharted was a movie, and now it's Last of Us, and I'm sure
Twisted Metal.
Twisted Metal. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's still in development for sure.
I know.
It's cool to have, and that a lot of that is coming from a single player, you know, universe, right? A story universe.
Yeah.
Because it's so well crafted, you know, a lot of ideas have to be told from beginning to end for that to happen in a linear format like a show or a movie, right? I mean, there's no doubt that they can turn like a multiplayer game into a movie license, but that usually means that the lore has to be there to make sense. And so single player kind of makes the jump easier, in my opinion. There was a lot of that's happening that's super exciting. And I think you're right. A lot of that is driven by indie. There was a crowd there. But I think a lot of it is just the creative directors or the people creating or in charge of these remakes or whatever are kind of just growing into these roles, right? And we're kind of nostalgic about what we grew up playing. And I think recreating that too. And so we're catering to ourselves in a way.
Yeah, we're getting that generation that played the first Metal Gears or the first Dead Spaces, right? And they are becoming the next generation of game developers, and of course they want to revisit that because that's what made their childhood. So yeah, there's definitely a bit of that. We're finally getting old enough as an industry. Obviously, we had stuff like Pac-Man and stuff, but it's tough to make a movie out of those old games. But we've got video game stories.
Yeah.
That can be retold in a new generation, much the same way that movies are always getting remade all over the place. So we're definitely have reached that age now, which is interesting, especially because there's the there's the technology aspect, right? The technology makes it so that it almost feels much newer than a new movie, right? Because you've got that, it's not only just the story, but it's the way that it's told in graphics, right? And also the people that haven't played those games and probably wouldn't because of the older graphics now will definitely give them a shot now, right? So the player base is only just expanded much, much more because of that. So I'm sure there's tons of people that played Dead Space for the first time this year that never played them before just because they're like, well, it's an older game, and they play it now, and now they enjoy how good it was, and that's absolutely going to happen for the Metal Gear games.
Oh yeah, it's like, oh, you guys ever heard of Metal Gear? It's pretty good. It's like,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the player base have grown so like pretty much everyone, celebrities. I mean, it's a lot of it. I think the decade that gave us the Marvel, the superhero movies. I think this is our decade for games into entertainment. They're seeing this as the next golden egg, goose egg thing.
Yeah.
Right.
The way the comic book tour. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So I read that a few times. It totally makes sense, which is why they're heavily invested. And it definitely, you know, they're finding a lot of source materials that people are resonating with that is translating well. I mean, it's to have billion-dollar franchises from Super Mario, right, of all.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
That is super impressive. And I think they did a fantastic job translating a lot of that into a movie. It was fun to watch, and it was easy to follow. So,
yeah.
In terms of all the technology that you kind of been hearing, the buzzwords, right, the last 2 years. What were your thoughts about that? I mean, was it more of those things where, like, this doesn't have the staying power of what microtransaction or loot boxes? I get what they were trying to do with that, but this stuff is just, like, unnecessary.
I think it's just got to prove itself, right? That's the whole point. I mean, it's always feels like they're jumping to the end, right? That they're jumping, that this is going to be it, and it's done. But it's like, well, there's a lot of infrastructure. There's a lot of hearts and minds you've got to win over too, with that stuff. It's, I mean, you can only do so much with buzzwords. And I think that, Meta is a big showing of that, right? I mean, you can throw lots and lots and lots of money into this stuff, but, if you don't have the people and have the way that games do a really good job of knitting that community together, and a game like Ultima Online or a game like Star Wars Galaxies, the stuff that Ralph Koster used to do, he got that because he's been doing this virtual world stuff for 20 plus years. And so those lessons have already been learned. And if you don't take the time to learn those lessons, you're going to have the same problems that something like Meta does.
Yeah, well, I'm seeing an image in the background with your BB-8, right? So I'm assuming you're a Star Wars fan, like Ahsoka, that whole, you know, universe, yeah. TV series. Those plot lines are exactly laid out like a video game puzzle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's
yeah.
So cool to finally, like, yeah, they're getting it. You know, the way it's structured, it's so funny to see how the inspiration kind of goes into full loop, because obviously games kind of borrow from movies and TV, and now TV and movies borrow from games.
It's just an Ouroboros, just always continually. It's always continually a circle. Yeah. The games feed the movies, and the movies feed the games these days. It was really cool to see the beginning of Ahsoka basically just feel like Jedi Survivor, right? It's like, oh my God, it's like Ahsoka's just playing Jedi Survivor in real time.
Yeah.
It felt very much like that. Yeah. It was cool. It was cool to see that.
What do you see in the next few years of what, like, this, because I feel like some things are figured out, some things are being tested, other things are people, like, you know, basically us going into these director chairs, going into these creative roles for any of these industries. What is the general outcome that you feel that's going to be happening? Like, do you feel, I mean, it's already happening where game developers are working in movies now and TV, and movie and TV people are going into games for a lot of the same reasons, you know, stability, creative reasons, whatever.
Yeah.
How do you see this all shaking out with everyone's kind of experimenting right now, it feels like?
Yeah. I definitely think that games are only going to get more and more widespread and you're going to get more auteurs and stuff in there, because it's a type of storytelling that you just don't get in any other medium. You don't get that cooperation. You don't get that world where you're not just telling the linear story. You're building a world, and that has a very personal effect on your audience, and it's very, very satisfying when you do have that connection. It's a much deeper connection than with novels or with movies or television, just because of that whole world, and because people don't surprise you very often when they watch something. I mean, sometimes their opinions can surprise you of what you've written or what you've shown them, but they really surprise you with what they do in a game. That is, it's amazing to see when you turn it over to them. That feeling is really, really an individual feeling. It's something you don't see. And I think that's the reason why games are so huge right now, is just because it's the storytelling of the now. Like you said, it's this generation, and that's what they do. The games are the way that we entertain ourselves the most. I mean, movies, you can get some stuff like, obviously Barbie's huge, and that's a great story, but to live in the world, instead of just sitting there passively watching it, it's much more visceral, and it's something that sticks with you longer, I think.
Yeah. Another pattern that I might be making it up, right? But I go with gut feeling a lot, right? I feel like a lot more people are getting back into books lately. Like, yeah, yeah. Just going to Barnes and Nobles and just seeing the library, you know, not a lot of people before, and suddenly a lot more younger generation are discovering books again. Are you getting that as well over?
I see that. I actually do see that a lot. Yeah. I think that also kind of is a little bit of a pushback from being always online, right? Yeah. By being in social media, because it's you're not doing that by yourself, right? No matter what you're doing there, you're kind of being seen. Anytime, even just lurking, usually they can tell, you know, who's seen posts, and there's something very personal about reading a book, right? It's just you and your mind, and there's no influencers, there's none of that stuff. It's kind of discovering yourself a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Because you're forming your own opinion about the words that you see on the page, which you don't get a chance to do that online. The opinion's already been written for you, so there's a lot about that's novel to this generation, I think.
Yeah, I definitely feel, to kind of tag on to that, because I think people are having a healthy distrust of information at this point.
Thank God.
But like, yeah, personalities for a good period were being crafted by, like you said, opinions already formed for us through media, but also through, you know, online social networks, right? That there is like this pull, I don't know what it is, human nature finally pulling them back to like thinking for ourselves. And so, you know, to me, again, I'm going by gut feeling. I didn't read any paper on this, right? But it feels like the sudden need of single narrative experiences, right? And then this pull into libraries and people reading more books than, because again, books to me and single player experience were at the same time, right? Headlining, you know, the death of books, right? No one's going to read anymore.
Yeah,
it felt like the same period, but now I'm suddenly seeing people picking up a book, and not just like the Kindles, you know, they're actually getting physical books,
actual paper books,
paper books again. And it's all happening at the same time. And I can't help but feel that it's what you're saying. It's just people are wanting to form their own opinions again. Just by all the clutter that's happening, just trying to figure out themselves, because I do think a lot of the mental health that issues that people are having is that, you know, they're being fed nonstop with information, involuntary information, right? Not just even information, they're seeing involuntary information that's happening just everywhere they're going. It's like almost starving themselves a bit of information.
Yeah, and the nice thing about a book too is you open it up and there's no pop-ups, there's none of that stuff, right? I mean, even Windows now has all these alerts and stuff that it didn't have just a few years ago. And you cannot escape it. You can't escape that little notification that and I have that OCD where if I see that notification, I feel like it needs to be that I need to push it, that I need to react to it. So that is one other thing about a book is you don't have that. That's you. It's seriously all in your mind. There's no external influence at all. So that's that. There's something to be said about that too. It's even though you're deeply using your mind, you're still kind of turning yourself off from the world, which, you know, you're truly losing yourself, which it's even difficult in video games these days because of all the notifications and the latest battle passes and all that stuff. You can't really remove yourself completely from the world, even playing your favorite games, but you can with a book. So that's true. That's some place where you literally aren't going to be interrupted, at least not digitally.
Yeah, it is a welcome change, and I think everyone's finally embracing like old technology, old ways of doing things. I do want to ask you a question, right? With I hope that continues. I feel like that's continuing. I know for a while we had VR, right? It was exciting, but I feel like a new dawn is coming with the Apple device, which, you know, they've always been a generational impact with everything they release. Their device in particular, to anybody that likes technology, is super impressive. How it would change is still up in the air. I think it will, you know, as soon as some celebrities wear it or whatever, make it cool.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Is it going to make a change to how we interact with the world, with AR being its focus in an official way to consumers? What do you think?
I don't know. I still think it still looks a little bit ungainly. I mean, yes, it's definitely a step forward. And because it's Apple, it's going to be addressing fashion in ways that, you know, Meta or back before, you know, with all the other VR that they don't address, right? They usually don't address the aesthetic as much as Apple, and they do have a lot behind it. But I don't know. You really have to have that killer app, right? There's got to be, and it doesn't have to be a game. It has to be something in VR, you know, or even AR that everybody just has to have and just everybody just gets. And that's been a problem with VR because you still have the motion sickness problem. I mean, that's no matter what, there's still going to be a contingent of people that can't do it. And also just they feel silly wearing it. And we'll see if Apple can get over that. But there's still a lot of reluctance because of that. I mean, you see all those videos on YouTube of people that flailing around and breaking their TV screens. And the people that are gamers and stuff, that doesn't matter to them. But your regular person, the person that maybe just barely dips their toe into a phone game or something like that, are they still ready for that? Is that become commonplace enough for them? I don't know. Though I really thought that we were all on the right track with that, with the Wii, because the Wii definitely did things in a virtual way, right? Because of motion controls where everybody felt comfortable doing it. But it doesn't seem like that stuck. It seems like we've kind of moved away from that a bit.
Yeah, I feel like that's just like a Nintendo problem though, because they went from the Wii to the crap. What's their new one?
The Switch. Switch. The new one. Yeah.
I mean, they like I still know people that play the Wii for the reason why it's unique, right? And the Switch, even though they have the motion control, it wasn't their focus. It's more about portability, right?
It's definitely like a peripheral. It's like a little thing, and it doesn't feel the same, right? Having those tiny little Joy-Cons in your hand is not the same as the Wii Remote. The Wii Remote really had some physicality to it, right? And it felt a little bit more natural, right? You could imagine a tennis racket in your hand a little more with that. It's a little easier for your mind to bridge that gap, I think, than that those tiny little things that just doesn't quite feel the same.
Yeah, I mean, the way they marketed was completely different. You know, it was more about, you know, handheld than the motion control. And Nintendo gets bored, I guess, every time. It's like, we killed it, next. You know, they never really extend, you know. I think if they went, I mean, in a way, they had a misstep with Wii U, which, you know.
Well, the funny thing is they did, right? They had a misstep with the sales, but that's still a dry run for the Switch. I mean, that tablet in your hand, that's what's that different? Usability there. Yeah, they got what they wanted out of that data, right? Out of that data and the usefulness of that. And it's like, okay, if that works, now if we can make that so it's that and that's the same thing that becomes the TV. So, I mean, yes, they lost in market share, but they always build on their successes. I mean, as bad as the Virtual Boy was, that still was their first toe into VR, right? So they still learned something from that. And that's where you get something like the 3DS is from the old, they celebrate their failures, and I think in a way that most other companies don't.
Right. I mean, they don't sink ships with their failures. They don't like
start exactly.
But they build off it correctly. But like in a lot of ways too, they lose the essence. They lose like further potential with the Wii by basically diverting to a different direction too. Because I agree with you, the Wii and the Wii 2, quote unquote, could have been building off of that, but they just switch every consoles into something new because they get bored of it, which is great for them to be able to do that. But it also shows like how small of a company they are to only be able to focus on one thing. And this is what everyone.
Yeah, you're right. Like a Sony or a Microsoft would still have that division, right? They would still have that. They would still be pushing forward on that. Like obviously Sony still is with the PSVR 2. I mean, you're right. The Nintendo is singularly focused and is small because it's just a game company, right? It's that's the extent of its box. So you're right. It's, I guess that's why you kind of get that, because they have to think of it that way. They can't think of it any other way, because they've got the one next target, and they're always going for that one thing, and they don't really kind of. They don't support their older stuff in that way. They're happy to resell it to you on the new system. But but as some supporting it as it stands, you're right, and that's probably why, because they are just a game company.
Yeah, like every time they switch to something new, I feel like they're leaving hundreds of millions of dollars on the table. I mean, the old NES games is like proof of like. I mean, all these early indie devs were just recreating, Sprite. Yeah. I mean, it's still heavy now. People are making Sprite games because of old NES games. Yeah. And even playing old NES games, these arcade machines, people are coming with the custom arcade machines, or like there's simulation like consoles with like 1,000 games loaded up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo came with the smaller version of Nintendo.
Yeah, they did the NES and the Super Nintendo. I think they haven't done anything newer than that.
But they did years after everybody was emulating it.
True.
They didn't even really put resources behind it. They're like, here's one.
Yeah.
But that's like $1 million business.
Just to shut people up, basically.
yeah. So it's just funny. I mean, like you said, they only have 100 employees, it feels like sometimes. And they're either making the next console or they're making, Mario licensed games. They can't do much, but they're very good at it. I mean, they're very, it does feel like out of all these layoff stores, et cetera, Nintendo still has their core unit always because these games, each one is so excellent. There's no
they
way.
They have the highest attach rate for me. I mean, I have to admit, every time I buy a new console, it's at the end of the cycle. I usually have more Nintendo games than any other. Obviously, there's things like Game Pass to consider, but they do. You're right. I mean, because they're just a game company. If you're just a game company and that's everything you do, you put everything into it, and they do, and they keep. They also do such a good job of keeping their teams together.
Yeah.
I mean, Zelda. Those guys have been on that team for at least 3 or 4 titles, if not more. Some of them maybe even further, and that's just not seen in other studios. It's just not.
And here's another mystery. I never hear anything about an ex-Nintendo employee. It's like, where'd you come from, Nintendo? Like, I never met, I mean, except for maybe that Texas company Rare, right? Maybe.
Oh yeah,
but like, not even then. I don't really hear anyone leaving or like, you used to work here. They must have such a low turnover rate or just stay there forever, it seems. I'm surprised with all these buyouts that Nintendo was never in the conversation. Yeah.
You hear crazy rumors and that's it. There's never anything really substantiated. And you're right. That's, I don't know. I mean, I always thought that if anybody would do it, it would be Disney, but Disney is so, they're so hot water, cold water when it comes to games. They go from cycles though where they are all in and they're making games in Disney and that's what they're doing. And then like 3 to 5 years later, we're getting rid of all that stuff and we're licensing it all out. And they go back and forth all the time. And so I guess that's, I'm glad that they haven't bought Nintendo, because Nintendo does feel kind of like the Disney of video games, right? If you think about the characters and you think about
so much
the
happy. Yeah.
Yeah, the way that the IPs are perceived, that's a very close knit between the way Disney and the way Nintendo is perceived. So it sounds like a great fit on paper, but Disney has never really wrapped their head around video games the right way, at least not for a long enough time. So it's probably better that they don't, that they haven't done that. But that would be the one I would think that would want to do it. But who knows? I don't know how often they get approached, or you know, or if they don't, or they people have approached them enough times to know that they're not, that they don't ever want to, or how, what those things, what really goes with that. But yeah, they've struck their own path through their entire history, and that goes with, you know, with the idea of being bought. I mean, that might be just an anathema to them, because they are who they are, and I mean they've been around since long before video games. I mean, they were making playing cards, so that's, we're talking about an old company. So yeah, who that they don't have any reason to be bought, that's for sure.
Yeah, I will say this, it's part of someone's plan for sure. With
I'm sure that's all, I'm sure they're always on somebody's target. I have no idea how receptive that Nintendo is to that.
Well, Mario hitting $1 billion that quickly as a movie probably turned a lot of heads. I mean, that IP, if anything, reiterated as how important it is to global success. I agree with you with Disney. Like, Disney and Netflix are, have always been back and, you know, super competitive, you know, with Disney with their own streaming service. I do feel like Netflix has, they're going to strike something with their game division.
Because I
think, yeah, you're right. I mean, Disney going back and forth and mostly off games right now. They're leaving such big potential by just trying. I mean, they're licensing Star Wars out, and we're seeing a lot of Star Wars success.
Sure.
But if they're not thinking anything beyond that, I think it is a mistake. Because Netflix at some point will own everything. In terms of their IP being a game or movies, and if they nail that part of the business and becoming streaming game business as well at the same time, it's going to be,
they've
hard
been
to
very smart
build that.
At doing it quietly and slowly. Whereas a lot like Stadia and stuff like that, you know, with Google, they've been trying to make a big splash with games and come out strong.
Yeah.
And Netflix, it's like a lot of people still say Netflix does games. They don't know that they do, because they're not confident enough in it. They're smart enough. And I think that might be just because they had to pivot away from physical media to streaming. They had that big change, and that was, they did a lot of the homework before that worked. And I think they're probably doing the same thing with games. They're dipping their toe in. They know what they're doing with their A/B testing. I mean, that's something that they've got down pat. So why not? Because they don't have to depend on it yet. I mean, obviously streaming is not what it used to be, but still, I don't think they quite have to rely on the game. So they can take that time to get the not just the games, but the way that they surface the games to their public, right, to their users, to get that right. And if they do get that right, then all of a sudden they are ahead of some of the other bigger companies, right? I mean, that'll be huge. That'll be absolutely huge. And we're seeing Game Pass be the biggest thing that Microsoft is doing right now for games. I could easily see Netflix coming right in behind them and passing all the other companies if they do it right, right? If they actually hit that note on making sure that getting the games to the players is the easiest and the best way, and still make a fun game and not kind of like inhibit because that's the problem I think like Stadia has, is that it got in the way of the games. There was too much in between the people and the product, right? There was too many steps they had to go through. You had to buy through them. You had to use a lot of their stuff, and that soured a lot of people. And that's something that Netflix hopefully is going to get around. You're right. They're kind of a dark horse in that. It'll be interesting to see how they pull that off.
Yeah. I mean, like, the reason why, everyone knows, like, the game business is a big business to tap into. Everyone's trying to get into it, I feel. We always forget about Amazon, but they've been around for like 15 years in games. They just haven't, you know, that shows how hard it is. Throwing money at something doesn't work, right? And they're still at it, right? For good reason, because they know that this is something we cannot dismiss. You know, Disney maybe in terms of resources, they just don't have the time to invest. Which
I don't know what it is with them.
It's a mistake. I think it's so many IPs. Oh my god. IPs.
They have all of them. They have all the IPs. They have all the toys.
An Indiana Jones game. Yeah. I mean, that's Uncharted. That's why Uncharted was made.
Exactly. I mean, that's why, if you want to go way far back, that's why Wing Commander was made way back in the day, because everybody wanted to play that X-Wing game. It was, and Wing Commander had to come out first. And then of course we finally got X-Wing, but they just don't do it right away. Right. They want to see it done. And then they kind of want to just slide in on something that already works, right? Yeah, well, which is weird for a company that's based on technology. If you think about it, way back, Disney was like the first, like Netflix or Facebook back then, because the technology they were using for their 2D animation was unprecedented. They were a high tech company in the 40s and 30s, and it's like they're happy for other people to kind of cut, you know, be the cutting edge, and then them to kind of follow in behind it, I suppose. Is what they've been. I mean, Pixar is the big exception, but Pixar wasn't theirs at the beginning, right? They bought into it. They didn't blaze that trail. They just followed along.
It's true. Yeah, I think they're resting on their laurels a lot lately.
Just a bit. Well, they do have a lot of laurels.
They have a lot. This is what I'm saying. It's just like the age of these, you know, us growing up, I just don't think they're in those positions yet at Disney. It feels like, right? So they're not able to kind of make these moves that we know that is the right move. The amount of IPs to turn into games at a place, endless amount. Yeah. Even if it's just point and click adventures. What was that game that with the knight, the classic one with the knight and, I mean, that was based on Disney animation, basically, right?
Like Dragon's Lair, so you're talking
Dragon
about?
Dragon Lair. Yeah. Huge shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like Disney alone can turn any of those old animated into that, and it'll be, people will love it. Point and click, I feel like, is kind of coming back in a way, weirdly. Like I see so many games in development that are point and click adventures again. It's so funny how a lot of things are being pulled back to, you said, like we're growing up and we want to play those games again, and so these people are making it.
Well, the thing about the adventure games is it's that plays into the whole like cozy games movement too, right? There's not a lot of pressure in those games. There's a lot of, I mean, there's the frustration of trial and error, but that's on your terms. It's not time based. It's none of that stuff. And so a lot of people, they want to come home and not be stressed out by the game they're playing. And people are getting older, and they're not quite as hand-eye coordination savvy as they used to be, right? So the adventure games feeds right into that whole aesthetic that people want to come home and unwind with their games. So it makes sense that those are coming back.
Yeah, those are the exact same reason why I like single player games. It's just like I just want to be a part of the story and feel good, you know, by the end of it. And not have to be pressured about like not getting a frag or shooting my own teammates. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, God, you know, I just want to chill.
Not watching your lane or
like God. You know, let me just tell me a good story. Yeah. But a lot of these things, it does feel like a lot of these companies are holding back their potential, which is a shame because, like I said, Disney is. Like you said, you know, they shared a lot of the same veins as Nintendo. Like Nintendo's doing what with IPs, with their IPs, what Disney should be doing with their IPs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel because of that, lately their animation, their movies have been taking absolutely been so bad. Like, yep. I mean, I know that the live action, like, I get it, right? People want to see that. But I was watching The Little Mermaid, besides the whole racial thing, right? The story alone, it was just bad. It was just badly made. I was like, why does this have to exist? It's just bad storytelling, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Doesn't engage me in any way. And they're making more. I don't understand. Like, I feel like they're losing. I think what it feels like the guards there are trying to replicate success by just literally doing what you call that type of animation when they're just copying frame by frame. What was it? Oh my God. Animators are going to kill me.
Like rotoscoping?
Rotoscoping, yeah. So yeah, literally rotoscoping like old classics, but, you know, without the soul. You know, it's missing the soul of storytelling is how I feel watching these movies. Like some of the Pixar movies are kind of like this too. Like lately,
They have lost their luster. I think I would say the last three or four have not. I would prefer to watch the Disney Studios movies actually, like the Wreck-It Ralphs and stuff, than the Pixar movies. They just and I know that there's been a bit of a brain drain, obviously, so at the top end, because there's been scandal after scandal all over the place. So
sure,
but that kind of stuff. So sure, there's that. But you'd hope that.
One person had that much impact. That's scary.
I know. Yeah. Is that really what it was? Could it be that? Who knows? Maybe. Because it doesn't. The like you're right. It's the soul doesn't feel like it's quite there anymore. And I think another reason why is because with all these streaming services and all of this media, that there's really. There's a drain on writers. They're just, you can't have that many good writers in one place anymore, because there's just so much stuff to make. And so we're kind of going to have to wait for the newer writers to kind of cut their teeth and get that experience that we're used to on these older projects, because there's just too much out there. And I think that's another reason why the strikes happen, is because there's so much content that the studios are kind of were in this position where they could do that, right? They had enough money to kind of string people along a bit, but it's finally coming back to bite them, you know, because you can only do that for such a certain amount of time before everybody burns out. Then you have that, literally you have nobody that's working on your projects, which is what we're ending up with now. And another thing is, every time there's a new medium, they always have to, like, they've got to be squeezed into giving the percentages to the people that make it. Every time it happened with, you know, with music, and it happened, and now it's happening with streaming. It's that it's just, it takes a while for people to catch up to just be recognized again for the contributions that they make. And I don't know why it has to be hard every time, but it seems to be every time. And that, now we're dealing with that. And that doesn't even broach the subject of AI, and we haven't even talked about that. But that's that's another thing that's huge about the near future, is the industry getting a hold on that and figuring out exactly what that means to the industry, because that's one thing that's a change that I have never felt as seismic as that but the whole time that I've been in the industry. I mean, microtransactions online, none of that stuff feels as monumentally shifting as that can be, because it can replace 100 writers in a room, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be the best, right? It doesn't have to be the best material. It just has to be good enough to sell. Yeah. And we've seen that's just good enough for many, many things. And that's a scary proposition.
It is a proposition that everyone's dealing with. Like, I think because of the, I think a lot of is what you're saying is, like, more than ever creatively, there's so many avenues to go to work now, right? Because we're in a quantity era. There's so many streaming services. Yeah. I'm not just talking about games, but movies and for creatives to be a part of, because they're constantly needing new content because they have their quarterlies and their I don't even know what Netflix is. It once a month? I forget when they release. Every week, every Friday they release new content, right? So there's like this endless amount, and there's five of them or something, right? Apple has one, Netflix has one, Disney has one, Amazon has one, and then like obscure ones, right?
Paramount
Peacock, whatever. Everybody's Mac. So more than ever, right? So it's a quantity over quality. So how can you know, put all your work in? So it's not about like I have something, like you said, the we were discussing, you know, a lot of these stories feel soulless because it is not existing because it needs to exist. It's existing because of I need to fill in content.
Yeah. Right, so I need them to pay for that one more month. I've got to pay. They have to pay enough to make the next quarter look good. Yeah. And then the next quarter it starts all over again.
And then, so this is a never ending problem because there's no way.
Yeah.
Right. That they want to stop that machine going because it is producing in terms of subscriptions or whatever. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we have an emerging tech that seemingly at surface solves this problem.
Yeah.
Where it's one person for every 100 riders that can pump within like prompts of a second.
Yeah.
However, you know, it's doing it too good. And so like, what about the people? Because it does replace or at least at some, you know, it does stop, you know, the process, the creative process, or we have to rethink, right? But it's happening too fast. No one was ready for it. So there's going to be some compromise, which is what the strike is about.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to shake out, because that technology and the need for something like that technology is happening. People are paying for it, right? And people want it. The compromise is, I have a hard time believing that. I think it's just going to be a pause or a slow transition. A slower transition is what the compromise is. It's like what people are asking is like, let's slow it down a bit, right? Let's not get rid of everybody. Let's slow it down a bit so we can react.
Yeah.
Rethink our lives, rethink our careers or something, right?
Yeah.
Which is what I'm seeing, because I don't think the AI thing is stopping. I mean, the people who are paying for it, people who are using it, like you said, it's good enough. And
yeah, that's the, yeah. It's, and the scary thing is how long it takes for actual legal ramifications, right? Because it always takes so long, and it's because
how much content's gonna be made before it?
Yeah, exactly. How many lives are going to be, how many people are going to be out of a job before it starts to be where that's, you know, where it's against the law or at least restricted or something to that effect? It moves too fast, and that, you're right, it's scary. It's already happening, right? I mean, they're already doing that stuff. There, who knows within the, especially because of the strike. I mean, the studios aren't spending their money on projects, on live projects. What are they going to do with that money? I mean, they're probably going to use it for AI research at this point. So yeah, it'll be, like I said, the one thing that to keep your eye on for the next 18 months to 5 years is going to be what shakes out of that, because that's going to change our lives in ways that we cannot comprehend.
Yeah. Well, I'll end it with this. I mean, I would love to do a part two because AI alone is like major, right? But yeah, like, I'm already seeing companies like Blizzard who outwardly announced like, oh, we're gonna feed into our own AI machine, because if the problem was data mining, you know, unlicensed products on the internet, we're not doing that, but we're feeding stuff that we own and training AI models. And like, you know, Netflix and all these guys is like, oh, okay, we won't train it on things out there, but we have a huge library of content.
Yeah, exactly. Or like you said, Disney, they have all the toys.
Give me a second. I'll do it your way. I'll do it right. Like, you know, how are we going to stop? Yeah. Are they not allowed to do that? I mean, they own it, right?
Yeah.
They paid for it.
Yeah.
Like, they did it. And it's going to work, not maybe as good as ChatGPT or whatever, but eventually it'll get there. You know, all the scripting, all these frames that they can just import. You know, it'll be a weekend for these these IT guys to to import. So what were you going to talk about then? So that's the part of the conversation that I think a lot of people kind of gloss over is like, all right, you know, I get the internet scraping thing. Yeah, it is bad. But if they scrape their own stuff, is that bad too, or is that not allowed?
Yeah. I mean, we'll find out.
Well, you know, I'm serious. I definitely want to do a part two because there's a lot about that I want to dive into. But you know, this is the hour mark. Hopefully, that was painless and fun.
Oh yeah, it was great. It was a pleasure. Absolutely.
This is also the part where I shut up for the people that, you know, if they want to reach out, talk to you on X, right, or any other platform.
Yeah.
How do people find you?
I'm not on Twitter. Okay. I'm barely on Facebook, so unfortunately, I'm not that kind of guy. which for better or for worse, you know, it makes my life a little easier sometimes.
LinkedIn.
Check out. we don't even have anything coming out of my studio for at least a year. So, but yeah, keep an eye out on Splash. We'll have some Splash Damage. We'll have something within the year or so. It won't be what I'm working on because what I'm working on is super, super secret. But check that out. Once again, play some tabletop games. I said that last time. I still say it this time. There's something to be said about it. It doesn't have to be D&D because I know that's even become problematic these days. That's like reading a book. It's something that you won't be in. You won't be disturbed with a pop-up, and you won't have to have opinions formed for you. It's definitely something that I think is one of the most formative things for my game design career. And I just do it if you can. Sometimes it's tough to get people together, but it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely have been on the comeback for a while now. Like everybody.
Yeah.
That is the way they enjoy social gathering.
I think that's like you said, it's part of that. It's part of that getting offline, right? It's people have a hunger for that. It's definitely part of that.
Yeah, it's something. I'm not a very spiritual guy, but it's like for all of us to have that calling, that inner calling at the same time, it just feels like something's happening. For sure. But Brian, it was great having you always.
Absolutely.
Be sure to do a follow-up to talk about a whole dedicated episode of AI. I mean, I would love to kind of dig into your head in that. But for everyone else, have a good one. See you guys next week. Hello, everybody. Brandon here. I want to talk to you today about something very special. We've been on this wild ride together, haven't we? From my early days as a senior employee, feeling a bit lost, all the way to leading multiple studios, transitioning to smaller indie teams and to the mobile industry, and now running my own game studio for the last 6 years. Throughout this time, you've been here listening and learning along with me, sharing this never-ending journey of discovery. This year, I'm kind of on this quest of meeting serial studio founders, discussing acquisitions, or exploring what it takes to grow a studio to over 100 developers. I've always tried to find an exciting topic to delve into, and every year is a little different. The focus is a little different because that's where I am in my career currently, and I want to be able to share what I'm learning with you guys. So I've always been dedicated to asking the tough questions, bringing you insightful answers from industry leaders and experts. And now I want to share with you how I'm applying these answers to my own journey. This is why I'm excited to announce that for just $1.99 per month, you can now subscribe to our exclusive content series. These bonus episodes will give you a deeper look into my personal experiences and how I'm putting into practice what our esteemed guests are preaching. It's more of a personal side of the journey that I hope will show you that we're all in this together and we're all continuously learning. Whether you're a game developer, studio founder, or just a passionate gamer, there's something in it for everyone. By subscribing, not only will you gain access to this exclusive content, but you also be supporting the ongoing production of the regular programming. It helps keeps the lights on and ensures that I can continue bringing you top quality content and insight into the world of game development. The links to subscribe are in the description. Your support means the world to me and helps me keep doing what I love, sharing this journey with you. So show some love, hit that subscribe button, and let's continue this adventure together. Thank you all for your continued support. And as always, stay tuned for more exciting content. Until next time, this is Brandon, signing off.